This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Carrie Goldberg, in for Meghna Tsekhabarty today.
To many of us, advanced robotics might seem more science fiction than nonfiction. But over the last decade, as squadrons of winged robots or drones brought war from the skies overseas, a quiet revolution was also underway in the robot economy here at home. Real companies offering real jobs, developing robots just about all of us may soon be using around the house and at work. The epicenter of that robotics revolution isn't Silicon Valley. It's right here in Greater Boston.
My name's Jason Walker. I'm the director of operations here at Sci-Fi Works, or a robotics company in Danvers, Massachusetts.
Sci-Fi is a spin-off from iRobot, the company that made the Roomba, the robotic vacuum cleaner, and the PackBot, a treaded robot for the military. Sci-Fi has been focused on flying drones for the military, but with the wars winding down, the company is eager to enter the civilian market.
It's almost spooky looking, the way it hovers there.
Yeah, I've had my friends tell me it's a little creepy, which of course I can't see. I did the engineering on this airframe, and it's kind of my baby.
This flying robot is about the size of a basketball, shaped like a coffee can, with an internal propeller that allows it to hover like a helicopter. Jason Walker says this robot can do things like inspect bridges and other pieces of civilian infrastructure.
Instead of hanging a person off of the bottom of a bridge with climbing gear, which is the way they do it, our approach was to use a small flying robot to shoot video and not put people at risk and not disrupt traffic.
One of the reasons you see a lot of robotics companies here in Boston is clearly MIT.
This is Professor Holly Yanko, who runs the robotics lab at UMass Lowell. There are about 100 robotics companies in the region, more than two dozen research programs employing 3,200 people, all part of a growing industry worth $2 billion a year in sales. Holly Yanko says after MIT gave birth to a number of original companies like iRobot, the industry has taken off.
And what we're seeing now is a second generation of companies coming out of iRobot, people who had worked there, and they're creating new companies as well.
Of course, the military is a lucrative sector, but robotics have gone far beyond that, and it's now moving quickly into the civilian market. Again, Holly Yanko from UMass Lowell.
You have robots that are going into the water, for example, Bluefin has those. Then you have robots that are moving plants around, harvest automation. You have robots that are telepresence robots, so basically Skype on wheels. There's a company in New Hampshire called Vigo Communications doing that, as well as iRobot has a telepresence robot.
Yanko runs a new robotics testing center, sort of like a boot camp, where companies from all over the country can put their prototypes through the paces on a variety of different obstacle courses.
So if I kick the robot, it'll respond.
Ouch.
So I'm stopping the robot from reaching its goal. It should get pretty frustrated soon and tell me that it would like to pass through.
On this day, Julian Ware from a company called Adept Robots shows off a robot designed to carry things around factories. It will even talk to you as it moves.
Pardon me, please. I'm sorry, but I really need to pass through here. There is too much confusion.
Think of it as a coffee table on wheels that can find its way around a facility. So it's designed to carry things to and fro. We sell these type of robots to warehouses and hospitals and any areas where you have highly trained personnel carrying things around a facility when perhaps they might find other things to do with their skill.
While the UMass facility is focused on the robot ground game, other companies in the area are focused on flight. Which brings us back to Sci-Fi in Danvers, which makes this flying drone to inspect bridges. Operations Director Jason Walker says this is just the start of a robotics revolution that is changing the way we all live.
I can automate parts of my life that I can't afford to pay somebody else to do, and I don't have the time to do on my own. And even if I did have the time to mow my own lawn, I'd rather be mountain biking.
So where's this robotics revolution headed? Helen Grainer is CEO of Sci-Fi and says robots might soon be as common as a PC or a lawnmower.
I can't imagine many jobs that won't have robots playing a part in it. We envision robots working tightly together with humans, being co-workers, so to speak. Just like you have a computer on your desk and it helps you get your job done, you'll have a robot doing all kinds of jobs in the home, doing all sorts of chores. For the military, again, not keeping people at a safe standoff distance, making manufacturing more efficient so we do more of it in this country. Just so many applications.
Will they ever drive our cars, fly our airplanes?
Well, they already mostly do fly your airplanes, and Google has these robotic cars running around doing hundreds of thousands of miles. So I'd say they'll absolutely be driving us around, and that'll be great because we'll be able to legally text and do email while we're driving.
And that's Helen Grainer, the CEO of Sci-Fi Works in Danvers. In the next few years, drones like the ones made at Sci-Fi Works could become a common sight in the skies over Boston and just about everywhere else. And that's what we're going to focus on for the next few minutes. Coming soon to the skies above you, domestic drones. Joining me now to talk about the future of this industry is Michael Moyer. He oversees coverage of technology at Scientific American. And Michael Moyer, welcome to Radio Boston. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on.
Good to have you. Listeners, what do you make of the coming explosion in the number of drones for domestic use? We're going to be talking about that in a moment. Are you excited about this technology? Worried about your privacy, maybe even your safety? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. And Michael Moyer, let me start with you. Most of us think of drones as military weapons used in foreign lands, but the reality is much different. So when we talk about flying robots or drones, what does the future hold? What's the range of machines that we're talking about here?
Well, it's really almost up to the imagination. You can imagine small robots like the one you just featured to do small inspections on bridges. You can imagine larger drones that might park themselves over a metropolitan area for hours, days, even weeks at a time with high-resolution cameras to look down and monitor what's going on. And in Scientific American, just a few months ago, we featured a program there at Harvard where researchers are building what they call robo-bees, which are small drones about the size of an actual bee, about a tenth of a gram, that will be able to fly around and act in a coordinated fashion like a swarm.
So big drones, very, very small drones. I want to talk all about this. What will these drones be able to do? I mean, in practical terms, what are the various jobs that we can imagine that they will be doing for us?
Well, the big application right now is for surveillance, and surveillance could be of a number of things. Being able to do inspections of sites which are very difficult to get to, the bridge example that you used, if you have a large industrial site, an oil refinery, something like that, you want to make sure everything is working well. Certainly you can send a little drone up and have it fly around and see into those things. Scientists love to use them. If you want to go monitor a volcano, much better to send a drone than a person in to do that. Cattle ranchers might want to use them. And then, of course, law enforcement might want to use them for a number of different reasons, just for general surveillance purposes, and also perhaps to trail suspects. These are the sorts of issues that then start to get you into the civil liberties questions surrounding drones, but I don't know if you want to get into that quite yet.
I absolutely want to get into that because I think that's a really important theme. And before we do, though, just to sort of lay the groundwork here, according to the FAA, and I know you know this, according to the FAA's latest estimate, 7,500 small unmanned aerial systems will be in commercial use in the next 5 years, many of them for very mundane things, some of which you mentioned, like watching for forest fires or monitoring crops. But, you know, you mentioned this concern about law enforcement using these things, and this raises real issues about civil liberties and privacy. Help us think about some of these issues.
Sure. Well, the civil liberties and privacy issues fall into two big camps that I think you can separate them into. And one is drone use by law enforcement, and one is drone use just by you and me. If you look at law enforcement, There's the Fourth Amendment protection against search and seizure, illegal search and seizure in the U.S. And so what counts as an illegal search? Can the police department of your local municipality employ a drone and go and park that drone above your backyard and look and see what you're doing back there? Can they fly by your second floor bedroom window and take a look in? With some of these smaller drone systems that we spoke about, certainly the technical capability is there to be able to do that. And what limitations will we have on that sort of use? Right now, you know, this is a brave new world, and rules are not in place. The FAA, as you mentioned, has been charged by Congress and by the president with coming up with a set of rules for drone use in the U.S. That they the deadline for that is in 2015, and the goal is to get a lot more of these drones up and off the ground.
Listeners, what do you make of the coming explosion in the number of drones for domestic use? Are you excited about the technology? Are you worried about some of the privacy issues, some of the civil liberties issue that Michael Moyer, editor at Scientific American, has been talking about? Give us a call, 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Michael Moyer's done a lot of thinking and a lot of writing about this. He's in a great position to answer some questions and share your thinking about it. Could the police, I mean, let's just case in point, I know there's been Supreme Court decisions in the past that essentially ruled that a surveillance airplane could look down and get him, you know, take a picture or gather visual evidence, for example, of someone growing marijuana. Could the police legally actually fly a drone over your house and take photos without a warrant?
Well, right now, it's hard to get authorization to use a drone because the FAA doesn't really know how to deal with it. Certainly, a number of groups have authorization from the FAA, including the FBI. Mm-hmm. But let's take your theoretical question. Yeah. Say the police do have a drone and they would like to use it. There have been Supreme Court cases, as you mentioned, that say it is lawful for the police to fly over your home as low, in one case, as 400 feet, that they used a helicopter to look into the window of a greenhouse and see marijuana growing inside in the backyard of a home with high walls, and said that that wasn't too much of an invasion of privacy and it wasn't an illegal search. Certainly with a drone, which costs on the order of a few dozen dollars an hour versus a few hundred dollars an hour, that sort of surveillance becomes much more likely. As of right now, case law certainly would not prohibit that. What we're also seeing is that because that there's really no legal framework to guide us in these new technologies, you're seeing a lot of states start to come out with their own regulations saying what is and what is not allowed. Mm.
Do you get the sense, as you've looked at this issue, and the sense that I got just doing that, the reporting that I put into that brief piece that we just heard, I mean, I was struck by how quickly and how fast this technology is coming along. I mean, I sort of get this sense of it just racing along while we sleep, essentially. Do you think there's been the requisite debate and conversation in this country about the implications of what all this means?
No, not at all. And I think that that's only really going to happen when we get the first cases of a paparazzi flying a drone into Bette Midler's backyard, and the legal case that comes out of that, or the first case of the police doing what many people might think of as a questionable search using drone technology. But the technology, I absolutely agree with you, has moved so quickly, and it seems to have come out of nowhere because it requires so many other small technologies. You know, right now we have cameras in all of our cell phones. Mm-hmm. You know, they're that small these days. The wireless networking technology has kind of come up at the same time. And then when you look at this kind of framework that we have of GPS and all these things, then just getting a little, airplane into the sky and moving that around, that's kind of just, you know, icing on the cake. But it takes all these to work together, and they've all really developed so quickly in the last few years, and will continue to do so. There's been so much money in this with the military involvement And as you reported, there's a huge market out there. So it's going to keep accelerating.
You mentioned, these big sort of issues around privacy and civil liberties. You also mentioned this concern about paparazzi being able to employ this technology. Are we going to be seeing drones used by TMZ? And especially if they're as small as a hummingbird, it seems like this would be pretty devastating technology for a paparazzo.
I mean, I have no insider knowledge of this, but I would be shocked if TMZ did not have a drone of some sort right now. It's just a matter of when we get to see it. You hear every so often with the celebrity weddings how the paparazzi tried to, get a helicopter up there and do X, Y, and Z. Well, you don't need a helicopter anymore. You just need a drone that any idiot can use using their iPad. That has automated controls for go up to 400 feet, go north this far, go east this far, and sit there and take pictures.
Right. Well, let's take some calls. 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. We're talking to Michael Moyer. He's the editor in charge of technology coverage at Scientific American. And we're talking about the implications about drones, domestic drones, what it means, good and bad. Give us a call. Let's go to Steve, who's calling from Cambridge. Hi, Steve. You're on the air.
Anthony, I see the drone as being a tremendous enabler for law enforcement. Fourth Amendment aside, I mean, if you had drones, let's say many of them in a city like New York, you could have them zero in on people who might be littering or jaywalking, or for example, they have banned smoking in all of their parks, so you could have lots of little drones in Central Park, and if someone hides behind a tree and lights up a cigarette with face recognition, you could get that person right away. I wonder what Michael thinks about the enablement of law enforcement to this degree.
Michael, hold the thought, because I just want to, Steve, if you don't mind, I'd love to just come back at you with a question. You sound excited about it, and I can understand why, but do you not have any concerns about that? Because what you just described there sounds like a brave new world to me, full of, fraught with peril.
Anthony, I'm not really excited. It sounds a lot like North Korea or East Germany, but, given how in what detail we are entering into a regulatory state, I mean, I can just see this, if you don't mind the pun, taking off.
Sure. No, not at all. Let's go to Michael Moyer. Yeah, go ahead, Michael. Sorry, respond to Steve there.
I mean, I think Steve is right on in that right now we we'll see other technologies such as facial recognition technology start to come up and be used in conjunction with these. And, whether or not the police choose to deploy them for minor offenses such as jaywalking, just recently I saw the news of a drone system that can be parked over a mid-sized American city with a 1.3 gigapixel camera that can look down for a matter of weeks at a time and track individual cars as they go to and from on their daily routines. Now, the Supreme Court recently said that GPS technology can't be used without a search warrant. You can't put a GPS monitor on the bottom of someone's car without their knowledge, without a warrant. What happens if you have a drone up in the sky that can effectively do the same thing as what that GPS technology did? Certainly, these are questions that we're going to have to deal with as a society.
Big questions.
And kind of carve out what we think is acceptable and what is not acceptable.
Well, another question from James, who's calling from Concord. Hi, James. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you. I wanted to, first of all, say I'm really excited by the prospects of a new industry being born here in the Massachusetts area. And I also wanted to ask a silly question. I actually watch a lot of PGA golf on television, and they consistently have these aerial flyovers of different fairways. And I wondered if that was an application for drones or whether or not they're using helicopters.
Interesting. I'm not sure. What do you think, Michael? I mean, I know, for instance, we get those wide shots of Fenway Park at night from the Goodyear blimp, for example. It sounds like what James is describing isn't very far from that idea.
No, it's not far from that. And it actually brings up an interesting point. I don't know, point of fact, whether or not the CBS uses drones or helicopters for those shots. But the interesting distinction here is that, you know, you're talking about shots that are done by national TV for their weekly broadcasts. And CBS has plenty of money to rent a helicopter and go up and down, you know, the 18 fairways of whatever golf course they happen to be at the time. It's for all the little things, right, that don't have a national network behind them, for that don't have that kind of money. That's when you're going to really start to see this technology be deployed. For all the smaller use cases, it's just going to make things that much easier.
Michael, you mentioned that a bunch of states have looked at how to regulate this. I know that Congress is considering regulating drones, and our own Congressman Ed Markey has proposed legislation that's aimed at preventing, I don't know the details of this legislation, but what I read about it, preventing flying robots from becoming spying robots. But my question to you is, given how quickly this technology is moving, is that even possible?
That's right. It's a very difficult question. Mm. And you look at the parallel of, for instance, the internet in the 1990s, and you can imagine, and the Congress did put on. They realized this is a very powerful new technology. It's growing exponentially. It has a lot of capability to be used for a lot of great things and to build a lot of businesses, and we've seen that happen, but it also has the potential to have a lot of negative effects. And how do we effectively regulate it? You know, you take a shot knowing what you do at the time, and there's been a lot of criticisms of the regulations that the Congress has put on the internet back in the 1990s when the internet, you know, there was no Facebook. There was barely even a Google back then.
Sure.
I forget exactly when Google came up, but it looked basically nothing like what it does today. You know, this is the challenge that they face, is what core principles then do you want to try and base your regulation on? The state of technology at the moment that you're writing the bill is not a core principle.
Interesting. Let's go to Joe, who's calling from Winchester. Hi, Joe. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I had a question about the rights that are being ascribed to drones. If a bothersome drone comes near my person or near my property, have I a right to SWAT that drone, to destroy it?
Destroy it.
Whatever means I can employ.
That's a great question, Michael. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. That is a great question. And there was a case last year where animal rights activists deployed a drone on one of these private game farms. I forget exactly where it was. And what the farm the hunters did is they basically shot it out of the sky. My understanding is that it is not illegal for you to do that. However, if you do that on your property, you're liable for anything. If that drone comes down and hits somebody in the head, then you're going to be liable for that. But I think the more effective thing to do would be to try and, you know, ask the person driving it, if you see that person, to make it go away. But it's unclear what laws then, if the trespassing laws control the area of a few hundred feet above your home.
Joe, thanks for that call. Provocative question. Michael, why does this issue seem to capture so much public interest? Because there is a sort of, you know, gee whiz element to this whole technology, but it does seem to really spark one's imagination, both you know, imagination about good things and things that are of great concern as well.
Well, I mean, you see the unease. I think it's reflected in a lot of your caller's excellent questions of the erosion of our private space in some way. And I have a backyard. I have a home with a fence around it, and that is my sanctuary. And I certainly don't want my neighbor pulling up their drone and just kind of flying over and violating my sense of space, my privacy, my home. And I don't want law enforcement to do it either. The trouble is that there's no hard and fast rules that can guide us on this in the same way that fences make good neighbors. There's no fences hundreds of feet in the air. And indeed, we've decided as a society that public airways above a certain height are publicly navigable. Otherwise, you could never take a flight from Boston to Los Angeles.
Yeah.
It'd be too difficult in between. So, you know, there's a lot of gray area between what I think we can all agree on. If you have a drone sitting at 6 feet high while I'm barbecuing in the backyard, then that is unacceptable. But if you have it at, for instance, above 400, the Supreme Court has said maybe that is okay.
Well, that might sort of get to this next question, and that is, in a way, aren't we already here? I mean, when you think about what the technologies that Google Earth employ, I mean, these satellites up in space that are looking down and can zoom in with an amazing degree of acuity onto what's going on here on Earth. Doesn't this already exist in a way?
In a way, yes, but you go and look on Google Earth, and that's a static image of questionable resolution. I went on, my wife and I are actually going to be moving in the next few weeks, and we're very excited about it. And I, of course, go on to Google Maps, and I look at our new home, and I say, man, I can't wait. And that's going to be great. But that was a shot from a few years ago.
Right.
I certainly don't want to type in, you know, Google Earth and then go on and see a live shot of that backyard that I'm going to. And I think that's really where the unease really starts to come in.
Well, speaking of unease, I have to ask this. I mean, I know the drone industry, you know, doesn't necessarily want to be associated with this sort of dark chapter, what some people would call a dark chapter in American history. But what about the implications of military drones? The U.S. deploys them overseas with deadly effect. Should Americans be worried about the day when these weapons of war could be deployed against them via these drones?
You know, certainly that is not the most important question right now, and no one's really talking about that. However, it is provision in some of these state bills that forbid the use of any weapons on these drones. Mm. You can imagine examples where law enforcement might want the option to have some sort of a weapon, for instance, to stop a runaway vehicle in a chase situation, to be able to apprehend someone on the run. And then that little provision gets carved out and gets used more and more and more and more. Vandals that get out of hand during what was a peaceful protest, and you have a surveillance drone overhead, and they kind of can go in and put zip ties on everyone. Who knows what the use cases are going to be? Right now, no law enforcement agencies are talking about this. The technological capabilities will be there at some point in the future. And so, but I think that causes even more unease in the population than just the surveillance aspects. And so you might expect that we, you know, have some protection put into law against that.
I have one last question, and we just have about 15 seconds left, but what's the most sort of out there surprising use of this new technology that you've heard about that maybe we haven't? I mean, as this technology develops and these drones are flying around up there, surprise.
I would say the long-term endurance drones that can stay over one medium-sized city for weeks and monitor everything that goes on.
Fascinating. Michael Moyer, he's the editor in charge of technology coverage at Scientific American, and he's the former articles editor at Popular Science. Michael Moyer, thanks so much for this fascinating discussion. We really, really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
And listeners, there's a lot more information on our website, including pictures of the robot and drone industry here in Massachusetts at radioboston.org. You can also post your comments there. Stay with us. There's a lot more program coming up. A special WBUR project tries to make sense of the millions of pieces of data related to the state drug lab scandal. I'm Anthony Brooks with Kerry Goldberg. This is Radio Boston.